Hello, this is Harold Covington of the Northwest Front, and this is another one of a series of short podcasts that I'm doing as kind of a supplement to Radio Free Northwest, so that you guys don't have to download 180 Radio Free Northwest and listen to them all to find that one answer you're looking for. Now, you might call these short casts a kind of ongoing FAQ feature. All right, tonight let's deal with two questions. First off, there's the issue of what we call shortstops, i.e. people who begin their Northwest migration, but who end up stopping short of the actual homeland in Utah or North Dakota or Northern California, someplace like that. And then they want their locality included in the homeland when the revolution comes. And then there's something else I want to talk to you about after that. But first, this is an email that I got a while back on the shortstop topic, and it's pretty typical. Hi, Harold. Why not drop down into Northern California? It's a very conservative, white area and mountainous. With the gold reserves, water, timber, and agriculture, it will be a very valuable part of the Northwest Republic. Which way will Utah go when America starts to break up and we make our intentions known? I know that they would prefer to be their own sovereign country, but they might see us as a very viable option. Now, this may be a topic to stir some good conversation and get more people to look outside the box. Of course, it's no coincidence that this comrade happens to live in Northern California. Now, we get this a lot, and we've been getting it ever since the publication of the first Northwest novels. People from Northern California, Alaska, Utah, Colorado, North and South Dakota, they often come to me suggesting that we include their home states in the projected boundaries of the Northwest American Republic, basically so they don't have to move. Now, I've even had people try to persuade me to include San Francisco as part of the Northwest homeland, so people living there don't have to move. Now, don't get me wrong, Frisco is a very beautiful city, and I'd love to include it in some kind of white republic, but let's face it, it's not really part of the Northwest, is it? I get why these people want me to do this. Packing everything you own and moving stakes is an incredible hassle. Believe me, I get it, I do. God knows I should, I've done it myself often enough. I have nothing at all against these people who are trying to schmooze me into relieving them of the moral responsibility to pack that moving van, and I don't blame them for trying, not at all. But remember the whole theory behind what we're trying to do here, which is kind of like what the Mexicans are doing. We're trying to deliberately alter the racial and political demographics of part of North America. We want to concentrate white nationalist numbers in a given area to where we can actually form communities, real people living in the real world half an hour's drive from one another. We want to begin functioning in the real world as opposed to on the internet, and also to reduce the whole problem of white racial survival and revolution to manageable proportions. Now, remember, when the excrement impacts on the revolving blades, we will at least to some extent be fighting a colonial war, struggling for the independence of a far-flung outpost of empire, far removed from the capital and the centers of wealth and power. A backwater that the wealthy Jews and multinational corporate executives of Washington, D.C. and New York and Houston really won't be all that upset about giving up if it has to be done to preserve their power and their profits. Now, we need land to grow into as a nation, true. But on the other hand, we have to keep this practical, and we mustn't get too greedy. Now, there are enough existing racially conscious whites so that if, I say if, we can ever get our act together, lay aside all our petty differences, and finally unite behind the Northwest migration as every ounce of remaining common sense dictates that we should, if we can ever do those things, then we could easily concentrate 10 or 20,000 of us at least in 3.5 states. Now, true, I usually ask for only 1,000 fully committed and functional new settlers, and even as few as 1,000 would get the job done if they were all alphas. But there is, in fact, no reason why we shouldn't shoot for 10, 15, or 20,000 newcomers. Even now, without any further growth, our internet audience is big enough if I can somehow find the magic words to get you people's heads out of your asses. Now, these communities of real people that we build here in the real world, where we live within half an hour's drive of one another, and we no longer hide our faces behind computer screens thousands of miles apart, these communities will give us the basis for serious missionary work among the locals, so we can finally begin to draw our personnel not from the movement, but directly from the white community. Now, people who demand that I somehow magically convert all the locals so that they can set out the picnic tables and the cakes and the ale while you outside people then just sashay on in at your leisure and partake of a finished product, You got it backwards. You have to come here first. Then we set up the support system. Then the Northwest Front goes to town trying to convert the locals when we have enough of a support system in place to take the resulting heat. Now that is a major strategic goal. We could be doing that now, of course, except that nobody in the white population of the Northwest knows that we are here. Our websites are stuck on about 6,000 hits per week, and we haven't figured out yet how to get any responsible establishment publicity without somebody getting killed and without standing on a street corner holding a sign and wearing a costume and making fools out of ourselves. Now, if that ever changes, we'll be on our way. The primary tactical purpose of the Butler Plan is to reduce the problem to manageable proportions. The original proposed white homeland in my first Northwest novels consisted of a core territory of three complete Northwest American states, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. Now, by the time Freedom Sons rolls around, we have added Wyoming, Western Montana, and in the fictional war called Operation Strikeout, the Republic adds large parts of Canada, Alaska, and Northern California, but of course that's in the world of fiction. At various times in the past, a number of other parts of the general northwesterly section of North America have been suggested as potentially forming part of the homeland. Now, these include the northern third of California, above Redding, the state of Wyoming, the state of Alaska, and the present Canadian provinces of British Columbia and Alberta. These Canadian provinces I would especially like to include in the Northwest Republic when the time comes, but they'll be the responsibility of Northwest Front Canada. There is a half-assed independence movement already existing in Alaska, but it's kosher conservative and capitalist in nature. I mean, my God, look at Sarah Palin. And so it's useless as a vehicle for racial survival. There is also a separatist movement with a distinct racial tinge to it that already exists in Western Canada, but they don't seem to have gotten very far with it. Neither have the French in Quebec, as far as that goes. Now, the fact is that no separatist movement which attempts to use liberal democracy will ever get very far. Remember, the purpose of democracy is to prevent change. Now, for the entire 3.5 states that the NF presently considers to be our operational area, we're looking at a total of almost 300,000 square miles. That is a lot of territory to cover. We talk about reducing the scale of the problem, but let me tell you, the Northwest homeland is a big-ass place, and it's going to be hard for us to move around in it, given our limited resources, when even a single tank of gas is practically an item of capital expenditure. Imagine how it would be if we started to include these other areas and had to take road trips to and from Salt Lake City and Cheyenne and Fargo or San Francisco just because some of our people don't want to exert the necessary effort of will to pack the moving van. The whole concept of reducing our operational area to something manageable would be defeated, just as we need communities of racially conscious white people living within half an hour's drive of one another. We need every place in the homeland itself to be within, I'd say, ballpark one day's drive max. Okay, maybe a long day's drive, but we do have to draw that line. Now, when the balloon finally goes up, I personally would like to glom onto as much territory as possible. Now, if we are in some kind of situation whereby we can acquire Northern California and Utah and Wyoming or whatever, great. But we don't know exactly how and when and under what circumstances the inevitable breakup of the United States is going to occur. Until we have a little more information in that area, the Northwest Front has to keep to the present 3.5 states. God knows they're going to be hard enough to work with. Okay, now, while I've got your attention, I'd like to have a quick word in your shell-like ears about this "I'm gonna stand and fight" bullshit. Now, we have to convey somehow to millions of white people the concept of the Pacific Northwest as a refuge and a homeland, a place where one can go to, quite frankly, flee from all the rubbish that they're facing back in New York and Georgia and Texas and California. Now, a lot of times I get this response, or some variation thereon. "I ain't moving nowhere, Harold. I'm staying right here in Hogwaller, Arkansas, where my daddy and his daddy and his daddy afore him was born and raised. White people gotta stand and fight." Okay, great. More power to you. I'm all for that. But let's actually see some of this standing and fighting. And, oh, by the way, sitting behind a computer keyboard with a can of beer and posting silly gibberish to VNN, that doesn't count as standing and fighting. Nobody is standing and fighting, not in Hogwaller, Arkansas, or anywhere else. Racially aware white people are hunkering down and hiding in their homes, or else maybe running off into the piney woods and hiding from Obama in a double-wide mobile home with a closet full of guns, which I very much doubt will ever fire a single shot at the racial enemy. Now, this talk about standing and fighting for all of America is basically just another excuse to avoid packing the moving van. Another excuse to do nothing. Hot damn, us white boys are great at that, finding some logical, rational, and convincing reason to do nothing. Just like leaderless resistance. Great idea in theory, except in practice it's turned out to be all leaderless and no resistance. And that's not Lewis Beam's fault, that's all on us. Lone Wolf is the same way. It's all lone and no wolf. Just another excuse to avoid meeting other white nationalists in a Starbucks and to avoid packing that moving van for the Northwest. Contrary to popular belief, there is nothing at all dishonorable about fleeing from overwhelming force and tyranny. That has been done time and again by our people down through history. The Welsh and the Afrikaners, and of course many of the early settlers who fled from oppression of various kinds in Europe and came to this country from across the sea. The Pilgrims themselves were fleeing from oppression in England, you may recall. Now remember the Swamp Fox during the Revolutionary War in South Carolina? He who fought and ran away so that he could fight another day? Going over the top to charge the machine guns head-on like both sides did at Verdun in the Battle of the Somme during World War I is just stupid. Relocating out of bad or intolerable lives is as Aryan as apple pie. There is no honor or common sense in continuing to live in a place where you're surrounded by MUDs and most likely in physical danger of being assaulted and victimized and possibly murdered because of the color of your skin. Why do so many of you keep on doing it? It's just plain dumb. Yeah, packing a moving van involves physical effort, but Jesus, are you all really that lazy? Somehow or other, we have to strike a chord in our people that hasn't been struck for a long time. We are going to have to persuade them to do what hundreds of thousands of our ancestors did 150 years ago, pack all their stuff into a Conestoga wagon, or in this case, a U-Haul truck, and strike out onto the Oregon Trail into the unknown. We have to persuade you to come home.